This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. Good afternoon. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We're seeing sunshine right now on the lake, but expect a little breezy and warmer, but also maybe some rain later this afternoon, maybe a thunderstorm. It's 61 degrees at O'Hare and 51 at the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parente.
Cisco, the Dow is now higher by 2 points, and the Nasdaq's losses cut to 2. S&P is down 4. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index lower by 0.33%. The trade gap got smaller, shrinking to an 8-month low in February. The surge came as we sold more planes to overseas carriers. Now that, of course, will change next time around after the grounding of Boeing's 737 MAX planes. Shares of United are taking flight. They're up almost 5% after the carrier posted better-than-expected quarterly results. The airline has been able to lower its costs and boost sales. United expects strong travel demand for this quarter. In a video to workers, CEO Oscar Munoz says United's effort to effectively manage costs is working. And one last economic report. It's another sign the housing market is back on track. Applications for loans to buy homes rose to the highest level in almost 9 years last week, up 0.9%, enough to send the index to a level we haven't seen since April 2010. Refi demand, though, tumbled more than 8%, and the National Association of Realtors says the overall index was down 3.5%. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, a lot to talk about, trade to Netflix to Pepsi Cola.
Yeah, busy day here on the Noon Business Hour. Summer airfares may be rising, all because of Boeing, or at least in part. And Personal Finance Wednesday, saving for summer camp. It can be expensive. How you can get your kids involved. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Shares of Netflix are falling today despite the streaming service beating quarterly earnings estimates. We'll find out what's going on there right now. A report on the trade deficit tops today's data, while a deal between the U.S. and China on trade appears to be almost complete. We are joined by Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and a political economist at andrewbush.com here in Chicago. Welcome back, Andy. Nice to have you again. What do you have your eye on today?
Yeah, on the trade gap, that did improve, and it was a little bit of a surprise. So why do we care about that? Well, obviously, that's good if we're exporting things in the United States out to other countries and importing less. That goes right to the bottom line GDP. And so a lot of estimates for growth in this quarter have gone up. I don't know if everybody remembers back in December, people were looking very dismally out for the first quarter. And yet we're looking at now something between 2.2 to maybe 2.5% growth for GDP in the first quarter. And this trade number today just supports that view that the things are a little bit better than expected. But I will caution people because there were some very good airport export numbers in there, and we know the problems that Boeing's had, so we're not expected for those big numbers to continue really maybe into the second quarter.
There was some talk among people on Wall Street just even a month ago or so that they were really worried about the economy as a whole.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's symptomatic of just how, you know, people were very concerned in December, that's for sure. But obviously, when the Fed changed its stance to say that they were not going to raise rates again, and then we got news that potentially the U.S. and China would come to a trade agreement, it's fueled just this massive rise in the stock market and overall. And it's, to some extent, been justified as well by, you know, stronger than expected economic growth.
Talk about if we get this deal with China, as it's at least been rolled out here. I mean, we don't exactly know the details yet, but we're hearing that trade gap with China would be bridged even more. If that happens, naturally, other countries are not going to have China buying as much stuff. Just talk about what might happen in the economy here in the U.S. and then globally if China is buying more of our stuff.
Right. And so let me take it to the Midwest a little bit. In the trade numbers, we saw a huge surge in soybean exports, which is great for the farmers in the Midwest and everybody who grows soybeans. That was up almost 16% in February. And that's to some extent a reflection of what we were talking about here, maybe a thaw in the trade relations with China. Yes, in the United States, you know, we would export things like, obviously, energy. We produce a lot of that, and agriculture produce a lot of that as well. That would take away from other countries such as the Middle East and maybe other countries such as Brazil and Latin America as far as agricultural exports. So it could put potential downward pressure on those countries' economies and certainly in their farm economies. And in the United States, that would aid us in our economic growth, and especially on the trade. Again, going back to the trade numbers, we have a gap with China of about $30 billion per month. So if you reduce that down significantly, that goes, again, right to the bottom line of GDP. So you're looking at, you know, maybe a quarter to a half a percent of growth higher because of that reduction.
Now, let's talk about one of the potential downsides. And let me know, maybe this isn't founded here. I'm all for China buying more of our stuff. But if you do have this new sort of surge to buy some of our commodities, are we going to see some inflation there that might impact other areas of our economy?
Well, as far as commodities go, I mean, yes, you would expect the prices maybe to at least to stabilize. And to some extent, we've already seen it, Cisco, because the markets are anticipating this event to occur. But quite honestly, I mean, natural gas is at, I don't know how many months low here, so that's not much of a concern as far as energy goes. I mean, oil prices are higher, obviously, that could be a problem. But I don't think inflation is really an issue, and it's certainly not going to show up to some extent overall in the CPI index from the commodities. It's not a strong component of inflation overall, unless you would have oil and gasoline prices go up significantly from these levels. And that's really probably the biggest risk that I would keep an eye on.
Helpful analysis. Thank you. Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, also political economist. You find him online at andrewbush.com. Coming up, Netflix issues its quarterly report and comments on Disney's entry into the streaming market.
Making sense of your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Netflix beat earnings estimates in the first quarter of the year, but there are some questions about what's ahead for the streaming service, and the stock is down about 1% today. Tim Hanlon is joining us, founder and CEO of the media consultancy firm Verter Group here in Chicago. Tim, what do you make of what Netflix told us?
Hey, Cisco, you know, they reported, Netflix did a very, you know, solid quarter. The reality is that they are a gigantic behemoth in streaming services. And that growth is, you know, not going to be as frenetic or as high as it's been in years or months previous. And, you know, I think Wall Street, you know, at the end of the day, kind of starts to freak out a little bit. When the growth is not as go-go as it has been in the past. You know, any sense that that growth might be slowing then tends to be a question mark on a lot of other fronts. But suffice to say, Netflix's business is doing very well. Thank you. And I think that commentary is very relative.
Any of this have to do with any of Wall Street reaction to Disney? Is that at all a factor now that they're going to be launching a streaming service?
So there's no doubt, we talked last week, you know, the Disney announcement was certainly very positive for Disney. And I think it's wrong to sort of characterize this as being a Netflix versus Disney or Netflix versus Amazon or Netflix versus anybody for that matter. As we kind of alluded to last week, I think when it comes to streaming services, I think Netflix has done an extraordinary job of extending their leadership and frankly, even defining the category of streaming services to the point where I think in most, at least Americans, mindset that Netflix is the everybody's number one streaming service, right? And I think that now the battle is sort of, you know, for the number two and those even beyond that. And I think Disney certainly portends to be maybe that nice number two for a lot of people. But, you know, Netflix's growth is, you know, has a lot of international ports of call yet to establish. And I don't think it's a one versus the other than it is more of a, how do these two kind of complementarily help and aid each other in people's mindsets?
I saw it was written today about the challenge here, and this is a time in which these companies are transitioning from linear to on-demand and entertainment, and that's so massive because of the content offerings are different.
I think that's a really important point, Chris, because what's really happening here is not just sort of the ascendance of Netflix and others like them. This is a real transformation, frankly, of how people, quote unquote, watch television, right? Linear viewing of television and or cable networks or channels is really very much melting into more of a program-centric kind of consumption model where people can watch one or a number of programs that they find interesting to them, regardless of the source. And that on-demand nature is hugely transformative to advertising, to subscription, to all of the business models of such. And that's why you see so much freneticism, so much change going on in such a short period of time, it seems. But it's an exciting time for sure. And consumers, I think, ultimately benefit.
Netflix raising prices again, is that one of the ways, because subscriber growth at some point is going to wane, is that one of the ways they're going to have to go after more revenue?
Well, there's no doubt they've got a lot of debt, and that is incrementally one way they're going to do so. But, you know, as I said before, I do think they will scratch the surface a bit in the realm of advertising, hopefully judiciously, at some point in their history. I'm pretty certain of it. Having a dual revenue stream of some sort will certainly be another lever that they can pull versus just increasing pricing, you know, of the subscription service, which, you know, may not last forever. As competition heats up.
Tim Hanlon, always good insight. Tim is founder and CEO of the Verter Group here in Chicago. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, saving for summer camps and trips and getting your kids involved. Bloomberg checks the markets next. WBBM News Time 12:25, a check of the markets from Bloomberg, sponsored by Baird. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, we are really hugging the flat line here, not moving too far south, but the Dow is a fraction of a point down, NASDAQ losing 2, S&P off 5. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is lower by 0.33%. Crude oil futures are headed slightly lower. Choppy trade for oil today, down about 0.1% and just under $64 a barrel. Now let's find out about the grains with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We have lower corn and beans, higher wheat. Wheat for July up 2.5 at 4.51. July beans down 9 at 8.92¾. We have July corn down 1.5 at 3.66¼. Lower corn and beans. This is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks basically at the flat line today. We'll see what's affecting the markets.
Personal Finance Wednesday. The cost of summer trips and camps for children can add up quickly. We'll take a look at ways to save.
Airfares are expected to rise this summer. We'll find out what's driving up the cost.
Community activists back a lawsuit to prevent tax subsidies for the massive Lincoln Yards project on the north side.
A Florida teenager suspected of threatening schools in Colorado is dead. A special report from CBS News is next.
Wall Street, the Dow down 3 points, the S&P 500 down 4, and the NASDAQ down about 7.
Mix of sun and clouds, some more rain on the way, maybe even a thunderstorm later this afternoon. High of 68, right now 55 degrees.
CBS News special report. Authorities say the threat to Denver area schools is over. CBS's Barry Peterson.
We don't know the circumstances surrounding her death. We don't know anything more about it than that. But sadly, an 18-year-old girl with an infatuation for Columbine who shut down the entire Denver area school system is dead.
After flying from Miami to Colorado, Saul Pius bought a pump-action shotgun and ammunition. KCNC-TV's Matt Croshaw.
The Clear Creek County coroner has been called up here to the area where she was located in the woods near the Echo Lake lodge here at the base of the road up to Mount Evans, and I'm told it's going to be several hours as investigators from both the Federal Bureau of Investigations as well as local officials kind of gather here on the scene.
The anniversary of the Columbine shooting is 3 days away. CBS News Special Report, I'm Pam Coulter.
An hour of financial planning each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time 12:32 as we continue the Noon Business Hour. The markets are pretty sluggish today. We're joined by Brian Battle, Director of Trading Performance Trust Capital Partners here in Chicago. Brian, why is the market so sleepy?
Yeah, Chris, a mixed day today and sort of a slow week this week because we're in the middle of earnings season. So a lot of businesses reporting how they did last quarter and how they see things looking ahead. So the banking sector has been under some pressure. It hasn't been going so well, but Morgan Stanley did well. Pepsi did well. Sprint and T-Mobile, maybe their mergers off, and then there's been some pressure in healthcare. So it's sort of a mixed story, and the stock market is reflecting that.
Well, a big story today is what's happening with China and the U.S. Let's hear your take on this.
Yeah, so we've been negotiating, or the U.S. has been negotiating with China about trades, tariffs, and intellectual property. And so there have been a couple of extensions. Remember, this was all supposed to be done, or it would be Armageddon in December. Well, then we get an extension to March, and now we have another extension. So the White House is thinking that the deal will be done around May sometime. They're predicting May. And so whatever deal that is will be good. You know, there's pretty low expectations going to be groundbreaking or anything that's going to be extraordinary. But any sort of deal that gets that cloud out of the market, that gets us trading back with one of our biggest trading partners, will be good for the market. A lot of that news is probably priced in, but at least we'll have some facts and some details that we can use as real information instead of speculating on these political risks.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Now, Brian, I want to follow up on China here for a moment. You mentioned that a deal is probably already baked into the markets. Are there, looking maybe 12 months out, 12 months after a deal, are there certain sectors that investors should be looking at to maybe see some growth in the wake of a deal with China?
Yeah, so that's a great question because it will affect different areas differently. You know, if you're a small cap U.S. Investor, you really don't care that much. But if you're a large cap, you know, it's Pepsi or it's Coke or it's Caterpillar, this is a big deal. So I think that the trade and the tariff isn't as much as a deal breaker as the intellectual property is. There's two things that China does that we really resent. First is they tend to appropriate intellectual property, and they don't let U.S. companies compete on the mainland. So if Cisco Incorporated wanted to build a factory in China, it would have to have 51 or greater percent ownership from someone from China. So those things are what we're kind of waiting for, is to see if there will be some loosening or some liberation in the trade agreements, and then can we get some intellectual property defense. That I don't know if there's going to be, like I said, I don't think it's going to be groundbreaking, but we'll get reactions once we get some of these details, because right now it's all about negotiating and very, very little about what the details are and who's going to be affected.
In the financials, what do you make of sort of the mixed results that we've been seeing this week? Morgan Stanley had a good report, beating estimates, but not all financials, though, have done as well.
That's right. The big banks are sort of bellwethers. They're large members of the indices, and so as the bank earnings have come out, the things that have been hurting the banks is their trading revenue. You know, and in December, remember the government closed, so that just put, and with that the SEC closed, so that prevented a lot of initial public offerings, and also the market was wild in December and January, as you recall. So their major bank trading revenue has been down. Their IPO, their investment banking business has been down. And as interest rates have declined, that's also been hard on the banks. Morgan Stanley is sort of breaking that mold because they make a lot of money in wealth management. Morgan Stanley rotated. Jamie Gorman is their CEO. They rotated to asset management and helping wealth management, and that has prevented their earnings from getting hit as hard as the other just pure banks. But as we spoke in the last call, you know, there was a lot of negative outlook, and the banks aren't doing great, but it's better than the worst possible case scenario. So kind of been a mixed story in the banking sector, better than expected, but still not fantastic.
Healthcare has not been performing well, but should it be?
Yeah, Chris, what a day for healthcare. So we're in earnings season, and the CEO of UnitedHealth was on a conference call, and he said, you know, there will be a wholesale disruption in American healthcare if this Medicare for All goes through. And that knocked about $28 billion off of market cap today because the insurance companies are worried about Medicare for All. So that is a political thing. It's a cloud over the medical industry, and it's a big deal for UnitedHealth because they serve about 50 million people and earn about $20 billion a month, a little less than $20 billion a month. So it's a huge business that would be threatened by a political event. So what has to happen is you'd have to have someone that believes in Medicare for All and then actually have to pass. So I think that might be more of a reflex on the headline, but if the insurance companies are mentioning it on their earnings calls, everyone's taking it seriously. So far this year, the S&P Health Index is down 13.5% because every candidate or a lot of the candidates are talking about Medicare for All if they get into office. So that's something that's really casting a cloud over healthcare, the healthcare sector in the U.S.
Interesting. Maybe some buying opportunities there. We'll have you back again soon. Brian Battle, Director of Trading at Performance Trust Capital Partners. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday, savings tips for summer camps and trips.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. Summer trips and summer camps can be very expensive propositions. Let's talk about ways to save for them with Craig Bolanos, founding partner, chief executive officer of Wealth Management Group based in Inverness. Craig, let's talk about getting the kids involved. I think sometimes parents feel like they're the ones that are totally on the hook for all these different summer camps and trips. Is there a way maybe to make the kids a part of this?
Oh, I think there is. 'Tis the time of year where parents all across this great land rejoice because their kids are coming back. But we also panic because we got 12 weeks and we got to get them into some programs. And you're right, the cost of camp is so expensive. It's no longer just mom and dad. It's the kids participating. And one of the ways we've seen some families we represent have their kids defray the cost is the kids go and volunteer during the year at the camp they want to participate in exchange for a reduction or a waiver of what I call day camp or summer camp tuition. It creates great reciprocity.
And what about just going out and getting a job? Is that something you advise?
I think that's a great thing for the older kids, absolutely. For the older boys and girls, I think they should be working. They should be earning their way, developing the ability to deal with some basic personal finances. But the real struggle is for so many people that have two, three, four kids home for 12 weeks that are under the age of 15, because what do you do with them when mom and dad are both working?
So you're saying that my 8-year-old, he's not quite in the category of getting a job yet?
I'm just saying Wealth Management Group is not extending an employment contract to your 8-year-old just yet. But thank you for offering.
By age 9, maybe. All right. Go ahead.
How much does it cost for a 1 or 2 week?
Well, you know, doing this topic, I went back and I looked at what space camp cost when I went to 1986 compared to what it is right now. And I was just shocked at how big the price tag is. But away from space camp, on a national average, what we're seeing now is a week of just day camp where the kids go somewhere and then they come back home. A week of day camp is costing somewhere in the $300 to $400 range. And a week of overnight camp, the traditional summer camp model, well, that's closer to $700 to $800 per week. So these costs really get staggering. It's intimidating for people.
It's also helpful for people who want to get into a great college to have some something that they've done like this 1 or 2 summers.
Oh, I think there is no doubt about it because, you know, summer camp is not just defined as going to the local swim club, going to the local sports camp. Summer camp is so much more sophisticated nowadays with people going out and doing program work in D.C., people literally doing studying abroad and other things. But if we bring back one of the ways to help defray the cost, besides budgeting properly throughout the year, besides having the kids participate and doing things to get a discount in the tuition or the fee, So many people have dependent care, flex spending accounts at their employer that they're not using. And if you've got children under the age of 13, you can use those pre-tax dollars in that dependent care FSA to pay for day camp. And I want to make sure people are taking advantage of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, get that tax-free benefit. Craig Bolanos, founding partner, Chief Executive Officer, Wealth Management Group in Inverness. Thanks, Craig. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday. Still to come, it looks to be an expensive summer for air travelers.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Airfares are expected to rise this summer. Let's take a look at the reasons why with Ken Goldstein, KJG International Consulting here in Chicago. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Ken. Fares usually run higher in the summer, don't they?
Yes, that's primarily because of the law of supply and demand. The demand for flying is very high in the summer, vacations and everything, going to Europe, going to the Far East, wherever. And then, of course, the fares go up a little bit. But as you just mentioned, although fuel has gone down just a touch, as Cisco said, fuel is expected to go higher. So the bottom line is when jet fuel is lower, airlines will add flights on routes that they may not otherwise be profitable, which adds to passenger choices, and they can push down fares. On the other hand, the opposite happens when fuel prices are higher. Fuel prices are about 20% above where they were a year ago, and prices are expected to climb higher the next 3 months. The other thing we got to factor in is the 737 MAX grounding, particularly with American, Southwest, and United, but that also affects carriers overseas. Like if you're going to Europe, Ryanair is supposed to get their planes. They're not going to get them for a bit. Norwegian, a low-cost carrier flying between the United States and Europe, they don't have their 737s to go with. So there's big concerns out there.
Are people a little easier about flying right now than they were shortly after the problems?
Again, as we've talked in the past, perception is reality. I think people are concerned with about the 737 MAX. Boeing has still got to do a lot more to persuade people. Unfortunately, what the president suggested, rebranding, is not a good way to go. But what you got to do is get the people to be assured that the aircraft they are flying on are safe. And as we've talked in the past, my feeling is with the American carriers, particularly as American said yesterday, they're going to add simulator training for the pilots. Southwest has a good program. United has a good program. The more experienced pilots, the better the flight and the better the safety feeling that the passengers will have.
Ken Goldstein, always good insight. Thanks for joining us. Ken is with KJG International Consulting here in Chicago. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app. WBBM News Time 12:55, wrapping up the Noon Business Hour with a check of Wall Street. Powered by ComEd's Energy Efficiency Program at Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, we've got slight losses. The Dow down 5, NASDAQ off 6, and the S&P is lower by 6, or about 0.2%. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is falling 0.5%. Healthcare stocks are again in the red today as Wall Street worries about proposed policy changes, and financials are taking a hit from a disappointing earnings report from BNY Mellon. Investors are, though, cheering Intel's decision to get out of the 5G smartphone modem chips. The Intel shares are at their highest level since the dot-com boom of 2000. And now that Apple and chipmaker Qualcomm have settled their royalty dispute, an analyst at Cowen says Intel is breathing an operational sigh of relief. T-Mobile CEO is in Washington, D.C. today, trying to rescue his effort to buy Sprint. There's talk that regulators won't let the deal go through because of antitrust concerns. John Leisure disputes a Wall Street Journal report that Justice Department staffers doubt it will be approved without changes. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Better over here. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.